It is Way of the Warrior, episode 284. Eric Hulkrin, along with Ken Evans. We will get into this. I know Ken's very excited to talk about Boobgate. We will also talk about UFC on Fox, and we will spend a great deal of time talking about either Vanderlei getting sued or UFC 190. All of that is next. It is Way of the Warrior.
Yeah. Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it.
That's all!
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Full mount, here's some ground, and pound by Nogueira.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
Way of the Warrior, it is your MMA show. Eric Hulkrin, along with Ken Evans, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts. Another big, huge pay-per-view this weekend, UFC 190 in Brazil. Ronda Rousey looks to defend her bantamweight championship against Betch Cohera.
Why do we call her Betch?
Portuguese, I believe, is the reason
right.
for that.
But, I mean, we've got an English translation of her name. Why don't we put a C or something in there? We just don't want it to look like bitch because it's like... It's misogynistic or something?
I don't know the answer to that. I also know that I'm not responsible for the...
What?
The translation of said names. Like,
okay.
It doesn't follow my job title.
I just remember the first press conference. I was like, wow, Ronda's really coming at her. Keeps calling her a bitch. I'm like, oh, that's her name. Oh, Joe Rogan's calling her that. Everybody's calling her that.
That said...
Nobody likes her.
That said, in the first embedded, Ronda did actually call her a bitch. So,
okay. I was right.
There is that.
So you stop doing it. Call her Beth.
Okay, fine. Wouldn't it be Bethy? It's Betch,
okay.
Yes. So Ronda, both Betch and Ronda are undefeated. Betch at 9-0, Ronda at 11-0. Betch is ranked 10th in that division. Ronda, of course, is the champion. And there's a fair amount of conversation talking about Miesha Tate and Ronda 3.
Ew.
That is based on Miesha winning this past weekend, beating Jessica Ai in Chicago, and the fact that I think 99.9%, now I haven't actually asked Ken, but I think 99.9% of the people that are watching this weekend feel Ronda is going to win this in the first round, and so we can already move on to the next fight.
You mean this weekend?
Yes.
I found it very interesting to see how much people are talking about the possible trilogy here when we still have a fight for Ronda Rousey. And yes, I know she's probably the most dominant fighter in the UFC at this point, man or woman. But I just find it interesting. You're going to fight somebody in their home country. And I know that Ronda's beloved in Brazil. I thought those pictures were super interesting.
They were really interesting, yeah.
Over the weekend. Because, I mean, if Chael Sonnen goes down there and is fighting Anderson Silva, he can't go and hang out in the crowd. That does not happen. He will get stabbed.
Yes.
But they love Ronda Rousey. So, I mean, I don't know how much of that's the movie career, maybe the Expendables, maybe the fact that she's just the best at what she does. I mean, that's a little difference, too. Chael and Anderson. Anderson was still the best at what he did, and he was Brazilian. So, that aside, she's going to Brazil. She's fighting Betch in her home country. And everybody's looking past the fight. And that's when I always think things get very dangerous. Now, Ronda Rousey's proven us wrong before. Uh-oh, is this movie going to be a distraction? Uh-oh, is the media going to be a distraction? Uh-oh, is this? Uh-oh, is that? At some point, where's her weakness? Is it with Betch Cohera? I don't think so, but I still find it very interesting. We're talking about that Miesha Tate fight. And I know that you made a joke about it last week. I'm not sure if I want to see that again, especially after the Miesha Tate fight that we saw on Saturday. So... we got to get through this weekend, and then maybe we can start talking about whether or not we want to see that fight. I didn't see Miesha Tate in that cage as good as a Miesha Tate we've seen before.
No.
That was a bad Miesha Tate. That reminded me of...
Or is that a good Jessica Ai? I mean, because one of the things I've been talking about this week that I thought was interesting is the way that USA Today had referred to the two women and by calling them the best women fighters in that division, meaning Jessica Ai and Miesha Tate, and referring to Ronda, of course, as one of the best of all time, right? So she's in a completely different league. And then, you know, as you said, Miesha didn't look as great as we wanted her to look. And I, with you, like you, I'm never a fan of these ridiculous trilogies for no point whatsoever. I mean, she lost the first one. She lost the second one. She likely will lose the third one. I don't understand the point of that.
Well, and that's a little different, too, than the fact that I know you really don't want to keep seeing Velasquez and...
JDS?
And JDS.
No,
but
no.
You have to admit, those fights keep going back and forth, at least.
Well, I mean, one of them went back and forth. I mean, he won one and then has lost all the rest of them.
Well, that's two.
Okay.
That's two so far.
But I mean,
so we could still make a
case. So I guess what I'm saying is, like, when you get, and I'm not calling it lucky out of a lack of skill, but when you hit somebody on the button in the first minute and stop that fight, and then the other two, he pounds you to death for 15 minutes, I think you still see the skill differential between Cain Velasquez and JDS, which is why I don't think JDS, and I know that's not what we're talking about, but the reason I think like this is because I don't think these fighters need to take this unnecessary damage.
Yeah, and I'm with you on that, and I don't know if I want to see that Miesha Tate fight, but I mean, let's break down this weekend. Ronda Rousey, is it just that first round armbar and we're good to go?
Well, so here,
10 minutes, you know, after Bruce Buffer intros him.
So, yeah, so here are my thoughts. So, Betch certainly has really heavy hands for that division. She can hurt a lot of fighters. She has hurt a lot of fighters. Part of the insider baseball is you see Ronda Rousey talking about the four horsewomen, the three women that she trains with that she's modeled after,
right.
You know, the Andersons and Ole and Ric Flair in the 80s wrestling days, you know, the greatest heel quad.
So not Silva, not Anderson Silva.
Right.
No.
So she's taken offense because Betch beat two of her training partners and then was essentially doing a countdown to get to Ronda Rousey. And that, and some of that trash talking developed this fight.
I thought that was awesome, though.
It is awesome until you actually look at statistics. And when you look at statistics, all of the people that Betch has fought in the UFC have a combined record of 1-7.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean,
1-7.
She's 10th in the division.
1-7, and she's 10th in the division.
Well, she's 10th in the division, and she kept fighting Ronda's friends to piss Ronda off. And I don't think Ronda's friends are that good. And I may get my ass kicked at some point if that goes anywhere. But I mean, I think this is one of those interesting situations where Ronda is so good. Obviously, it's hard to find people to train with. But I also think she's probably came up with these people, and she wants to view them as her equals. But every time you see them go out and fight, they're not anywhere near Ronda Rousey. So you have to wonder at some point if training with them is not going to hurt Ronda. Again, she's the best in the world. I guess I'm just trying to make a case for this to be interesting this weekend. But I mean, the fact is, Betch went out there and fought those fighters because she wanted to piss Ronda off because she wanted the Ronda fight. That's the best way to go. I think that's with Jessamyn Duke, right?
Yep.
And then Shayna Baszler.
Yes.
See, I don't know their names. I see them at WrestleMania all the time. She's 9-0. I get it against what would you say? It's 1-7 in the past.
1-7 combined. You know, if you combine Julie Kedzie, Jessamyn Duke, and Shayna Baszler, you get a 1-7 record.
I mean, that's good. You know, it's going to happen in the women's division, especially when you're only top 10. And I'm not saying she's not a great fighter, but I mean, you take the fights you can get. She's been on three UFCs. And she beat up Ronda's friend, so Ronda wants the fight. So
yes,
you make the fight, and you make it in Brazil, and you try to make it as interesting and sell the thing, and yes. I think it's sold.
Yeah, no, it absolutely sells, but I think most of that sells off the anomaly of Ronda Rousey, because if you look at these fights, Julie Kedzie, it was a split decision against Julie Kedzie, which Jessamyn Duke, who you just alluded to, not that great,
unanimous decision.
It took her two rounds to finish Shayna Baszler. And my point is, I don't think you have that much time with Ronda Rousey. And the problem is, if you go the Kat Zingano route, you're going to be gone in 14 seconds. Because the thing about Ronda is, when you look at the way she fights, it's the second, the nanosecond, your two pieces of skin in any part of your body that isn't an arm. So, like, when your two bodies collide, she's dumping you on your head and ending the fight.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying it holds up the way that it's been promoted and the fact that she's undefeated. Because, I mean, you start looking at things, because you mentioned the heavy hands. She's only won by TKO twice out of her 9 fights. So it's not like that's her gimmick. That's her thing where she goes in, she hits hard, and she knocks other women out, which I think would be a great gimmick if we could see a woman of that caliber at some point in the UFC. But it's a fight that's sold entirely upon Ronda. This reminds me of some of those Silva fights for a while we kept getting. Damian Maia comes to mind in that fight.
Sure.
Chael Sonnen was supposed to be one of those fights. And that's where I always kind of land again. It's like, Chow wasn't anything. Go back and download episode 33 or whatever it was.
Whenever
we talked about Chow and Anderson, we were probably saying the same things we are now. I don't know what's going to happen. This Chow guy is not, you know, he doesn't have big hands. Guy can't wrestle. Guy can only wrestle, but he can't finish. Blah, blah. I don't know. So maybe that's what I'm looking at here. Maybe she's the Chow Sonnen of the women's division.
Maybe, but I guess if Betch had fought somebody of the caliber of, let's say, Nate Marquardt, which Chael had beat on his way to Anderson Silva, we would be having a different conversation.
I mean, she's cleared the division out, essentially.
Jessamyn Duke lost this last... Who? Ronda? Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, no, this fight needs to happen. I just don't know how you make a lot of sense of it being more than a puncher's chance. And Ronda has been hit by, you know, she's been hit by people. It's not
right.
I don't know that that will scare her. And the thing that we've talked about a lot with Ronda is she started as a pure grappler and is now throwing some brilliant boxing combinations because she spent a ton of time working on her hands. And none of that bodes well for the people that she's fighting because she's, you get, you saw it this weekend and you kind of alluded to it. Misha Tate's coach says that Misha's way better than the 2013 Misha that just fought Ronda Rousey. That may be true, but that's under the assumption that Ronda Rousey was frozen in time in 2013, which isn't true.
No, I don't think that's true at all. But I mean, I don't want to say it's overrated, but I mean, we didn't get to see a lot of Ronda's new striking in a 14-second fight.
No, we just saw awesomeness. We got lots and lots of awesomeness.
I'm not taking anything away from that fight, but to kind of give her this world class boxing credit, we haven't seen that from Ronda Rousey, and that, you know, we talked about this, and the women's game is still in such an evolutionary phase that Ronda Rousey can be the best in the world and never really have to round that thing out because she's such a great judo practitioner.
Mm-hmm.
She's probably one of the best judo women in the world. I mean, obviously the Olympics proved that. So when you get that good at something in the women's game, you can dominate, and she's shown that. And her hands, she's working on them. They're probably better. Are they world-class boxing hands? No. Would she beat up Floyd Mayweather? Probably, but she's not going to try to box him if she fights him.
No, not at all.
She's not going to fight him. Don't take that away from this broadcast. But
interesting thing, I pulled some stats. I was hoping that you would bring this up.
Mayweather?
No. I pulled some stats that we lost. The most people that we've lost on our Facebook page was when you put up the question about Ronda fighting Floyd Mayweather. Was the number one time when people were like, nope, out of here.
They were. What do you mean lost?
Like they unliked the page.
They unliked the page?
That was the post of this year that people were like, no, I'm done.
They were done?
Totally done with this insanity.
How many people unfollowed?
It wasn't a lot, but it was, you know, because we don't lose a lot of people.
We don't need those people. Right. That's all I'm saying.
I don't disagree with you, but I just thought that was interesting.
See, because you know what's funny is those people knew in their hearts that they would pay to see that fight, and they didn't want to admit it to themselves. Because I don't care. Whoever's listening, if Ronda Rousey were to walk into a cage with Floyd Mayweather, shut up. You're watching it. I don't care. There's nobody. You're a liar. Go ahead and unfollow now. Unfollow now. Throw your computer or your iPhone or your Android. Throw it in the river. Delete your Podbean. Whatever you got to do. Take your radio apps and, you know, throw them in a fire because you're lying if you're saying you're not going to watch that fight.
I don't disagree with you. I said the same thing. It's never going to happen, but if it did, yes, everybody would watch it. The rest of this card is equally as stacked. This, if you remember, there was a bit of a visa issue with Tough Brazil. They were supposed to do the finals 3 or 4 weeks ago, and they couldn't. They are doing them now, so you get the lightweight and the bantamweight finals of Tough Brazil 4. You will also get, which I know Ken and I are excited about, the rematch between Shogun and Lil Nog, which took place 10 years ago in Pride and was a fantastic war of two human beings.
See, do we want to see that again? That'd be like going, oh, good, we should do Hoist and Sakuraba again because it was so good the first time.
Well, I mean, you know, it obviously could be cursed by that very thought process. But what I find interesting is both of these guys are kind of on the end of their career. Shogun thinks he can turn this around and keep going, but both Shogun and Lil Nog have a ton of miles on them, despite not being super old. So this rematch is something that a lot of people are excited about. The other fight that people are excited about is clearly Big Nog and Stefan Struve.
Yeah, oh, that's going to be a fun fight. But again, the Big and Lil Nog both have a lot of mileage.
I mean, and this is, you know, this is where you might see them go out on, you know, I hate the phrase, but go out on their shield. Like they're really close to retiring, and I would imagine
Stefan as well. Yeah,
well, Stefan at 26, ready to retire.
Yeah.
You know, but Lil Nog and Big Nog, this could be a case where both of these guys win. I wouldn't be surprised if they were like, yeah, I think we're good. We're going to coach.
See,
we're going to sell T-shirts. We're going to do something else.
The interesting part of this fight too was Stefan. I just joked about the retirement. I mean, this could be an interesting fight because usually if you fight a guy like Big Nog, there's a certain amount of reverence you're going to have inside that fight. you're gonna know you're fighting a
unless
dude.
You're Joe Lozon. Then we'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fair. But you've got a guy in Stefan Struve that has to prove something because he's coming off back-to-back losses right now. I mean, and they're two
back-to-back losses, and then nearly dying with a hole in his heart. Don't forget that part.
Yeah, I mean, well, and the retirement talk isn't that strange at that point to see what he's able to do here. And he lost to dudes with big names, but not necessarily big careers in the UFC. And that's Mark Hunt and Alistair Overeem. So, I mean, if Stefan Struve wants to keep doing this and wants to stay in the UFC, I mean, I would almost say this is a must-win fight for him.
I don't disagree, but I think it's also a must-win fight for the Nog brothers.
It's not really, though. They're going to go back to their gym 3 blocks away from the event, and they have people lined up to train with them. I mean, and they've made their careers. They're good. No matter what happens on Saturday
night. Yes, I'm just saying, like, as far as their...
Is Stefan Struve good?
I don't know that... I don't disagree with you, and I don't know that that's true. What I'm saying, though, is Lil Nog and Big Nog don't need to take another UFC fight if they lose on Saturday night.
Right, and I'm saying Stefan does.
I don't disagree with you.
But the only way he does is if he beats Big Nog, and probably convincingly. Now, I don't think the UFC is going to fire him off of a win, necessarily, but he's also... He's a guy who wanted to compete for the title, you know, 2 years ago, and he's had a couple of losses in 2013, 2014. He's essentially only been fighting once a year at this point. You know, he's got to get back to it. You joke about his age, but I mean, you can't get too old and keep trying to rock this, so to speak.
No, and obviously the heart concern is a real concern, and he does need to go out there and prove something on Saturday night. The other person that needs to go out there and prove something, who is actually likely on the chopping block, is Bigfoot Silva. He's taken out Sal Pellelli. And why? Well, because Bigfoot was one of the rare cases that I would abdicate, and I think many would follow suit. One of the rare cases that was actually using TRT properly. You know, because of his gigantism, he had an actual issue to deal with, and the TRT was helping him. Since not being able to use TRT, and I'm not asking you to feel sorry for him, but facts are the facts, he hasn't done so well post TRT. So Bigfoot losing to Sal Pellelli on Saturday night might serve to be the end of Bigfoot's run in the UFC.
See, I'm not as sure about that, especially, you know, we're gonna keep having to throw this in there, so I hope it's settled soon, especially if at some point Fedor is in the mix. Because you're going to have feature fights for that dude, right?
Yeah, totally.
And all the talk about Bellator and Fedor, none of it's confirmed. None of it's true. If he wants to fight Randy Couture, it'll probably be Bellator. We saw from the relationship that Randy and Bellator have. So
yes.
I don't know. I think Bigfoot's got a little more leeway. He certainly needs to look good in this fight, and the UFC is certainly setting him up to look good in this fight, too. Putting the fight in Brazil. Who was he fighting? Sal Pellelli.
Yes.
I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know who Sal Pellelli is. So it seems like a setup. Like, okay, go get this win back so we can put you on another card in a feature fight.
Well, I mean, this is, I guess, he's lost once in the UFC. He's a legit guy that lots of people are fired up about. And Sal Pellelli is one of those guys that... I think has a trajectory in the UFC. So while I understand from a Brazilian point of view that you would see that this would be a setup fight for Bigfoot, but I think it's quite the opposite. I think it's kind of a tune-up fight for Sal Pellelli to move on to bigger things.
Well, you know, he's got to come back from that Jared Rosholt fight.
Okay.
That he lost.
Yes.
So, you don't want me to bring that up as you were creating the story? Forget about that one. Nobody watched Tahuna Marquardt on Fight Pass anyway.
That's actually true. So we could skip that.
I can forgive that.
Speaking of Fight Pass, the prelims, Fox Sports 1, you get a huge fight at 170 between Neil Magny, who can get literally zero respect in the UFC as he's still on the prelims and fighting Damian Maia.
Yeah, but he's in that spot. You love this spot, though.
I love that spot, but like what, you know, like what in the actual F does this guy have to do to get some spotlights on his fight?
I don't know. Maybe he has to complain about Reebok on Twitter. Then Dana will start going, "Who is this guy? You look fat in your picture." That's what I think. You saw Dana yelling at 14-year-olds for being fat, right?
Who is this guy who's won 7 in a row?
What's going on?
Hasn't lost since 2013.
No, I
fought 5 times in 2014. Who is this guy?
He's in the pimp slot, so to speak.
He absolutely is, but like I guess I would like to see them have a, and maybe they do. They don't obviously need to tell us all this stuff, but I would like to see them have a plan if he beats Damian Maia. Like, what are we doing with this guy? Can we finally put him someplace that he's holds the record most fights in the UFC in 2014, 7 in a row, could make it 8 in a row on Saturday night. I just think...
Dude fights a lot.
He fights a ton.
I mean, he was even on the Tahuna Marquardt card.
Jesus Christ.
He was.
And the show comes off the rails, which is what I love about the show. Also on the prelims, you get the barista, Patrick Cummings. He is fighting Cavalcante, which...
The barista.
He'll never lose that. I know he's been doing well as of recently.
I love that they're still like giving him that run, though.
Well, he's winning, so that's exciting. Yeah. You know, he's fighting Cavalcante on the prelim, so lots of great fights this weekend. A big card, and I think part of the draw, as we've alluded to, is just seeing, much in the same way that we would tune into the Anderson Silva fights to see, can he do it again? Mm-hmm. You know, this is where we are with Ronda, is can she do it again? And as much as she, you watch her videos, you watch the embeds, you see the press conference, she talks about this heel thing that she's trying to build up, but she's as much a heel as Ric Flair is. Mm-hmm. Like, people love seeing her and want to cheer for her, and she's, as you alluded to over the weekend, she's getting quite a bit of love in Brazil, and I think that will be the same, and the draw is, of course, to see how she wins the fight at UFC 90 on Saturday night.
Awesome.
Also this weekend, we will talk next about UFC on Fox. We will also talk about Fedor coming back to fight for the title. I'm kidding. It's not what we're going to talk about.
Yeah. No, it's been confirmed. Somebody in Tampa said something on Twitter. It's confirmed. Right?
Ken will break down all the breaking Twitter news.
Confirmed.
It's next on Way of the Warrior. It is Way of the Warrior, your MMA show. Eric, along with Ken Evans, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts. We talked UFC 190. Time to talk UFC in Chicago, because a lot of insane stuff happened this past Saturday night, not the least of which was the dispatching of Henan Burrell by TJ Dillashaw, which was nothing more than spectacular.
I was completely and utterly proven wrong in this fight. I thought Henan would come back. He'd be ready to go. Thought he'd take the fight, not that he didn't take the fight seriously, but I thought he'd have a more serious look at this fight, knowing the guy had beaten him before, and really come in and be that Burrell we thought we knew from a couple years back. And he kind of took that Benson Henderson plunge. Like, once Benson Henderson, remember, lost that fight,
yep,
it looked like it took a while for Benson Henderson to get it back, and that might be where Henan Burrell is right now.
Well, and I think there's two things at play here, and we alluded to it last week, and we'll talk about it here in a second. Henan essentially missed weight on Friday night. You know, he had to strip down to be naked to hit the weight, and the weight cut for
him—that's not a miss, but that means the weight cut was tough.
Yeah, it was he came in at 35.5, which he had to take his clothes off to hit the weight, and which means the weight cut was tough. Everybody that week, that was last week, that was in Chicago, was talking about how he looked like a zombie, and the weight cut was terrible for him. Dana came out and said that, you know, 45 is probably the place that he should be. But what I saw was, regardless of the weight cut, he just had no answer for somebody who wasn't going to stand in front of him and throw at him till somebody fell down, which I think I saw on Twitter, and I don't remember who it was, if it was Snowden or if it was Adam Martin or whoever it was, but I'm sorry, I can't give you proper credit, but somebody said, you know, upon seeing this fight, Dominic Cruz would have eaten Henan Burrell alive. Well, with the way that he moves, I don't know that I don't know that he'll eat Dillashaw alive. That's not what I'm saying. But I think the movement and getting out of the way.
I guess I have a real problem with anybody saying that now. I mean, Dominic's had one fight in like the last 4 years at this point, right?
Sure, yeah, right.
I guess I've got a real look. I get it. We're always a victim of now, and we look at this fight and we look at the fact that TJ Dillashaw's beaten him twice. But let's give TJ the credit you gave him last week. The guy's become like this mini monster that nobody's been paying attention to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he hasn't really had the hype train behind him. He's in a weight division that's always had trouble getting people to look at them. Let's remember too. I mean, what was Henan was like 32-1 or something like that.
Yeah, hadn't been beaten in 10 years.
Right, and nobody still was really paying attention to this division at that point.
Sure,
a lot of us thought he was like the best fighter in the world, but mm-hmm. I mean, he wasn't selling a ton of pay per views at that point, even against Uriah Faber. So it was interesting to kind of see that play out after the words that you said last week, because I was watching the fight, obviously, and I was watching it with what you said in mind, like, because you really pinned this last week. You're like, he's going to come at you. He's on a tear. He's on a real tear, and he's a guy in this division where you might have slept on it just because you're not paying that much attention to the division. Go, oh, well, it's going to be back and forth because he won the first fight, and I was guilty of that last week. I'm like, ah, this is probably back and forth. Probably Henin Burrell just didn't prepare right, and he'll prepare right this time, and it'll all be good. And at a minimum, it'll be competitive. It's not going to be a blowout. And that thing was a blowout. Standing TKO in a championship fight?
An
come on.
Absolute blowout. And I think it was 28 unanswered punches to end that fight.
Wow.
And, you know, what I had said afterwards on Twitter, and I will say again here, is for all the people that were talking about, even I think Mike Goldberg was referring to the first fight being the biggest upset in UFC history. There's some hyperbole in there, but I think that statement has some weight. That said, this fight to me, way more impressive. You know, you surprise a guy and you beat him. Okay, it's the biggest upset in UFC history.
Well, nobody gave Weidman credit. You beat the best fighter in the world against Silva the first time.
You're Matt Serra. You're Matt Weidman. Uh-huh. You're a Chris Weidman one, right? The second time you go out there and absolutely destroy the guy who has absolutely zero answers for you until you finish him with 28 unanswered punches, that to me is star power in the making. And what's interesting is you've seen what we talked about, what the UFC needed. They know, and you and I know, that we're inching out of July and into August, and you're going to start to see more of these guys getting dinged if they're not paying attention to all the testing that they're doing. And then when we get to October, a whole nother level of that, where they pull out the IV and you can't use IV to put weight back on when you do these dangerous weight cuts. Guys like Dillashaw, I think, are going to be the standout stars in those divisions. You know, you may not get what you want out of Demetrius Johnson, but he's going to show up. He's going to be at weight. He's going to be spectacular, and he's going to do what you want him to do.
Mm-hmm.
And Dillashaw is the same. I don't know who in the hell in that division has a chance right now against Dillashaw.
He's How about just, the guy that beat him?
I think he beat a different Dillashaw.
You think Rafael Assuncao?
I mean, I'm down with the fight. Do it tomorrow.
Well, yeah. I mean, the guy. Yeah. I find it interesting because everybody wants to make the Cruz fight. And I get that. Cruz held the title.
But I'm with you on this. Like, he hasn't fought in forever and a day. He's won one fight in 3.5 years. Look, if he could get
help. Rafael hasn't had a loss. I'm looking it up here. I didn't know this off the top of my head. I know you're a big fan, though. Hasn't had a loss since 2011.
I love Assuncao. I love him. I just think watching this fight on Saturday night, that is a different TJ Dillashaw and somebody who's evolving. And like I said, sign it tomorrow. I will pay for it. I will watch it. Wherever you want to put it, I'm in.
I'm really torn on this one, because usually I'm going to say go ahead and make that money fight. And I'm probably still leaning that way, that you want him to fight Cruz, because that would get you a little more legitimacy. But, you know, this is one of those where I'm looking at it and looking whether or not you're going to actually make money on it, or if it's going to be on Fox. And maybe you put Rafael Assuncao in there. I think that's something that you have to really look at, because, Dominic Cruz, we may get some hate tweets or more unfollows on Facebook. I don't know. I think if you set that fight up right now with TJ Dillashaw, you're setting up a feature fight for Dillashaw. I think you really are. I don't disagree with you at all. I just don't think Cruz is there right now.
That's what I was saying. I was saying that I agree that that Dominic Cruz would have probably had his way with Henin Burrell, given that Henin Burrell that showed up on Saturday. I do not necessarily agree that Dominic Cruz, who's fought once in 3.5 years, stands a chance against TJ Dillashaw.
Once in four years.
I don't think he has a chance in fighting TJ Dillashaw.
You don't think that Mizugaki win was big enough to...
It was a fantastic win, but that's not enough to get you to the point. And I think that's almost insulting to Assuncao, who, like you said, hasn't lost in 4 years.
Right. Well, I mean, and neither has Dominic, but he hasn't fought for three of those.
Sitting on a chair at Fox Sports 1 does not make you a champion.
You know, we would have a tweet or a Facebook post waiting for us if I didn't make that clear right now.
Totally.
Somebody would go, it's been eight years.
He hasn't lost in 8 years. Right. He spent four of them doing TV. That's not training.
I guess this is one of those strange instances,
too. He has 17 ACLs.
I really don't care which fight you make first. If I were pressed to make it, I'd probably put Dillashaw Cruz on Fox. And then I'd let Dillashaw Assuncao fight and put it on Fox again. Dillashaw's the new Benson Henderson.
So Assuncao sits then?
See, that's the only problem. You make a guy sit and you make, you know, he's got the win against them now and he's got the wins in the past 4 years.
I think that's the better story. I don't disagree with Fox. You do these on Fox. I mean, he drew $2.8 million. It was a big...
Yeah, that was a nice little number.
It was a nice night for them, and some really great fights, which we'll talk about the rest of them here in a second. But I think you and I are suckers for the story. The story is Assuncao. Because, I mean, again, to go back to what we talked about with Jose Aldo, nothing against Dominic Cruz. Super nice guy. We've met him. We've had him on the show. I have nothing against him as a human being. but you can't trust his body to make it to the fight.
Well, see, and that, and well, that was going to be my next point, is maybe you set this fight up, because I do think you owe something to Dominic Cruz. You did at, you know, you had to take the belt. He admitted they had to take the belt. He had no problem with that. So we went from interim championship to championship in that division without him ever losing a fight. So you've got a former bantamweight champion. You've got your current champion. Make the fight, and let's put a Sun Sal on the card. Let's just set it up ready to go. Dillashaw's going to fight one of those two dudes. And you put it in on Fox, and you've got it all set and ready to go. I think that's what you do if you're UFC. And I don't necessarily like that type of booking, so to speak. Like, you're counting on a guy not to be there. But like you've said, we've had a couple of issues with Dominic Cruz. But, I mean, we've also got the fact that he's a former bantamweight champion. And he's the guy that left without ever getting beat for that championship. So maybe you let him, you know, have the fight, but you put Rafael right on that card. I mean, we've seen him do it before, so why not do it this time? And I don't know who a Sun Sal fights. I mean, you want to make it competitive
either,
enough.
I mean, like what you're talking about, Dominic Cruz was on the MMA Hour with Ariel Helwani this week talking about if everything goes well, he's thinking about possibly sort of kind of maybe perhaps the middle of 2016.
Okay, well then, no, I mean, no,
come
I don't
on,
think.
Dude.
See, and Dominic's got that leeway. Dominic's out
sure,
the Fox
he
money.
Can do
Dominic
whatever he
was the
he
champion.
Can do whatever he wants, but I think if you've got a
if
guy.
If Dominic's going to try to make. If Dominic wants the championship fight and wants that to happen then, cool. But that means you don't know if you're fighting a Sun Sal or TJ, because I think a Sun Sal should definitely get the fight. If that surprises me. Why? I mean, Dominic doesn't have a lot more time in the business. I mean, that's...
Well,
that
but
would be...
this is dependent on his rehab. If it goes well, he's looking at, you know, February, March.
Oh, you're talking about the actual... Okay.
Like, you know, so again, you can't trust his body. So
yeah,
I think...
No, well, then we make the Sun Sal.
You
got to
go with the Sun Sal.
We've settled it.
Done.
Make it happen, Joe Silva.
Make that happen. The other fight that I wanted to talk about... Well, two. The Paul Felder, Edson Barboza fight, I thought was... amazing.
I did not get to see that fight. We
it
got
was,
to the bar late.
You know, make sure you go back and watch this fight, because Edson Barboza wins it, but Paul Felder, it was one of those fights where nobody walked away a loser. You saw a great fight between two guys that I think a lot of people slept on. A fantastic win for Barboza and a great fight between those two guys. And speaking of a fantastic win, now I know we talked about last week that if Joe Lauzon won, it wasn't as if this put him in contention, right? Mm-hmm. It didn't really move him anywhere other than in the fans' eyes, continuing to be that fan favorite that people love to see. And this is why. I have never, and I repeat, never in my life seen a fighter end his own fight. And what happened is Takanori Gomi got taken down. He's not very good on the ground. Joe Lauzon had his day with him, flattened him out, and started beating on him. And as soon as he felt he was unconscious, Joe Lauzon
just
stood
got
up
and walked
and
away.
Walked away.
Yeah,
and said,
I did see that. You know, it's easy to catch up on a 2-minute fight.
Right. You know, I am done with this fight. And it took a minute for the ref to catch up and go, oh, yeah, no, he's totally out. This thing is absolutely done. Lots and lots of class from Joe Lauzon, you know, again, talking about fighting one of his idols and just didn't want to do the undue damage. He literally could have punched for probably another minute before Big John McCarthy jumped in.
What was Big John waiting for? I mean, I guess you give Gomi some leeway.
I mean, Gomi is one of those guys that takes a ton of damage. I think, like, you made fun of Sakuraba in the first segment. They would let Sakuraba get beat around with a base.
I don't mean
fun of doing that fight again based on history.
Something they did 10 years ago,
you know,
or
but
15
Sakuraba
years ago.
Is one of those guys, they'd like get hit with a baseball bat for an hour before they'd call that fight, you know, because that's just how he fought. So, yeah, I mean, hindsight is always 20/20 because you're not in there, but you've always talked about the way that John McCarthy specifically can tailor his game to match up with a fighter's strengths and know when that guy is actually done and when that guy still has more to go.
Right, and in this case, he didn't.
No, in this case, he was wrong. But I mean, normally he's pretty spot on in that stuff.
Does Joe Lauzon get the referee fee for that fight? Or
I mean, he did it. He didn't even need the ref, right? He just started the thing on his own.
He just keeps it all for himself.
As we said earlier, Misha Tate wins over Jessica Ai, and that
man that looked ugly.
It
you know what that
ugly.
Reminded me of? It reminded me of Strikeforce, and I know I've mentioned this a couple times. And I know it's hard to kind of dig those fights up. I don't know if they're on Fight Pass or not. The app's too hard to look through. But, I mean, we watched that fight. Was that Marlos Kunin? Was that the Marlos Kunin fight? And we were watching it backstage. And I remember specifically, we were backstage, and it was on the big monitor. And we kind of had to whisper to each other about how terrible that fight was, because neither one of them was able to do anything with position for the longest time.
Yes.
And we were kind of whispering because, I mean, obviously a lot of trainers and stuff are back there. We're trying to be respectful. And that's what this fight reminded me of. I was like, man, neither of them are really doing anything. And yeah, Misha ends up winning. But man, that was like the worst Misha I think we've seen since that fight in Strikeforce in Chicago. And that's counting the losses against Rousey, which I think most people, if you really pressed them, would say are her most impressive performances, probably those losses to Ronda Rousey.
I mean, without a doubt.
More so than a lot of her wins.
But, I mean, her coach is running around saying that she's better than she was in 2013, as I said in the first segment.
Know.
And I don't think that is true.
Is Jessica I that good?
She's
not bad.
She's certainly good, but I don't know that she's good enough to make Misha Tate look bad, especially if Misha Tate is now the number one contender, because I don't disagree with you. That wasn't a spectacular number one contendership to get you to where...
I mean, but we said that about Gus before, and a lot of us think he won that fight against John Jones. So
Fair enough.
So let him fight again is what you're finally admitting. You want to see Rousey Tate 3.
I do not actually want to see Rousey Tate 3. Speaking of fights that have been made this week, a ponderous one, in my opinion, Andrei Arlovsky has to fight Frank Mir at UFC 191.
See, I like the fight. If you take it out of the context of what we know is happening in the division, because I think that's a really cool, like, old school look at some dudes, but... I think this is a fight setup that Arlovsky is going to have a tough time winning, because Mir's jiu-jitsu is amazing. Mm-hmm. And still, he's still, other than Verdum and a couple other guys, he's probably still one of the best jiu-jitsu guys at that weight. That's never been Arlovsky's thing.
No.
And this is a fight that's set up to... The frustrating part about this fight, Arlovsky somehow wins. You can't argue that he should probably get that shot against Verdum, right? Mir wins. He's nowhere close to the title. I never understand when you've got a guy where you're just about ready to make money with him. You're just about really ready to make money with him, and you put him in against a guy that you're not. Frank Mir's a name. Frank Mir's a guy that can headline a Fight Pass or FX1 or Fox Sports 1.
Sure.
Even Fox Cards. But, I mean, you could make money right now with Arlovsky and Verdum. Just go make the money. Why are you making this other fight?
And that was what I was going to say. I mean, Mir is ranked 10th. In heavyweight, and Andre is 4. Mm-hmm. I don't know why Andre would take a step backwards and not just sit.
I think, the fact that Andre's fighting tells us a lot.
This does nothing for him.
Because Andre really should have never had to come back to fight. And he's doing
which tells us
something. I don't know financially. I mean, you know, there's a lot of postulation on how these Russian gyms work and how much of that money the fighters actually get to keep. I mean, think about it. Fedor's coming back. It's a dude who should have been set for life.
Fedor is coming back.
I know he's saying it's because of the competition and the blood and the training and the blah, blah, blah. I think it's because somebody took some of his money. That's what I think.
Right.
I'm not going to say who it is because I don't want them to take my money. But it's very interesting in this case where if you're Andre Arlovsky, you take this fight. Because if you're just purely looking at it, even from a money standpoint, you make more money if you can take the championship fight at some point. I just don't get it, because I'm looking at this division and we've already seen these dudes up there that are fighting and we know where they're landing. I mean, Verdum, Arlovsky just seemed like a no-brainer. Nobody wants to see Verdum Miocic necessarily at this point. I mean, it's a good fight. He's number 3. He deserves it. I mean, if we could see that, you know, if we'd see Cain or Junior Dos Santos, but he just beat Cain.
Well, and Junior Dos Santos is out with double knee injury, and Ream is waiting for him, right? So you've already got them, like, seemingly locked up.
So essentially, your only argument here is Stipe or Andre. And go with the former champ. Go with the guy that people know. I mean, they don't know Stipe yet. As much as we're paying attention to him, they don't.
I would argue that neither one of those guys needs to fight Frank Mir.
No. Yeah, well, Stipe would tell him to go pound sand. Like, no, I'm sitting here at 3.
He absolutely would sit at 3 and go,
what's that going to do for him?
If
you're going to make the fight, make it Arlovsky-Stipe at this point. Fine, do
I'm
that.
I'm down with
you
that. I'm
you
not
don't necessarily
argue
want Arlovsky to go fight for the title and probably get beat. I get it. So make it a contenders match. I love Frank Mir. I was always one of those dudes that was an advocate, but I just don't see why this fight is... In the context of where we are now in UFC, is a fight that had to be made right now. I think you can make Mir Arlovsky 6 or 7 fights down the road if they're both still fighting.
Totally.
Like you can let these guys both like take another fight, and they can both lose, and they can take another fight. They can both lose, take another fight, both lose. And we'll still probably be sort of interested in Mir Arlovsky. I just don't get it at this point.
It's crazy. And then the other thing that's happening this week is the UFC is finally trying to shut Wanderlei Silva up. They have taken him to court for different counts of defamation. If you've been following that story, Vanderlei has been claiming that the UFC fixes fights.
That's, see, all the crazy stuff Vanderlei's been saying. I really saw that, and I was like, okay, if you don't have some proof for that, there's going to be some comeuppance here.
And so when this got crazy was when Stitch Duran was fired. Vanderlei started doing web blogs and showing photos of Stitch and saying, now I finally have my piece of the puzzle. I'm going to show you all that the UFC is fixing fights. The UFC is fixing to get a lawyer and take him to court and sue him for right around $10,000,
okay,
that he clearly doesn't have because he's been banned for life from fighting in the United States.
So wait, does he have evidence, is he saying?
Well, I
didn't understand what that, like, is Stitch in on this?
He's totally crazy. So
right, I know
mean,
that, but I mean, what's his supposed evidence?
I don't know.
What's his jet fuel and steel beam in theory on this thing?
In Discovery, let's start with asking him what day it is, and then let's set a barometer there. Do you know what day it is? And then we can figure out if you have any sort of any idea what's going on.
Yeah, man, this it's sad too when you kind of think about the situation.
It's really sad, and it goes to something that we've talked about on and off over the past 6 years, is this discussion about what happens to dudes when you punch them in the head for 7 continuous years when they're on steroids taking more damage than they need to. What is that person
like?
And
this was in Japan for a long time.
What is this person like at the end of this? And this might be a case of what that person is like.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm, you know, again, I'm not exonerating Thiago Silva at all, but just got bounced from World Series of Fighting for some other issues that he has. There's another guy, took a lot of damage in his fights. Again, not exonerating what he did, but we at some point might want to have a larger discussion about head trauma in mixed martial arts, especially with these guys who take unnecessary punishment, which goes back to my discussion about why people like Misha Tate don't need to get beat up by Ronda Rousey 3 times in a row, and how I never want to see Kane and JDS ever again.
I see that. I think it's a discussion you have at some point.
Yeah, and so we'll keep you posted on all of that stuff.
Do we want to talk at all about Chael Sonnen and WWE?
I would love to talk about Chael Sonnen and WWE. I mean, you'll have to fill me in on it because I missed said story.
Well,
but
I mean, he did a little bit of an in-ring promo with, I think it's called Global World Federation Wrestling.
Yeah, he had been working with JR Jim Ross with some sort of capacity, and I saw that he did some in-ring stuff there.
Yeah, well, apparently he's going to be meeting with Michael Cole when the WWE is in Oregon next week.
Oh, so not wrestling, commentating.
Maybe both. Well, Michael Cole is also kind of in that talent developmental area.
Gotcha.
Now, too.
Got it. Okay.
So what do you think? The bad guy in WWE?
Well, we've talked about this, and I think the idea is perfect for him. I think it's interesting. He has said on more than one occasion on his podcast that he met with them, and it didn't line up. It didn't align with mm-hmm. what both parties wanted to do. Nothing negative. It just, he went in, they had a conversation that didn't really seem great for everybody, so they kind of parted ways. Maybe they've had a turn of hearts, so to speak, mm-hmm. but there's no doubt in my mind that he could absolutely positively sit in that chair, which I think would be a great
move.
And do what they always do, which is bring those announcers into storylines as it seems appropriate. And
well, and a dude like that, you could bring in immediately, and you'd have that cachet there. I think it's interesting to think about. I don't know if it would ever happen, and it's not because of Chael. I think it's because WWE. They really like to have those dudes under their thumb, and they like to direct them. And Chael's not a dude that's necessarily going to take that direction. He's going to, if he believes in something, he's going to stand up and say it. He'll say something on the air that he wants to say. Doesn't matter who's talking to him in his headset. So I think it's interesting to think about. I don't know if we'll see it happen, but you never know. August 11th, I think that's when WWE is in Oregon. They're supposed to meet with Chael. But Chael's got enough other things, too. I mean,
sure.
Think about those dudes in WWE. For the most part, that's going to be their life and what they're doing with their announcing. And a lot of them wanted to do that. Chael's got ESPN. Chael's still got fighting. I mean,
would this be part of their network then? Maybe he's doing like the Netflix doing a show, right?
There's certainly options for him, but I Chael's got enough brands in the fire, so to speak, at this point. We're not far. I think where are we? Maybe another 8 or 9 months? Chael could get back in the cage.
Sure.
We talked about it. I don't know what Chael would look like in the cage at this point. But it would certainly be interesting. So I just thought I'd throw that in. I didn't know if you'd heard that yet.
I have not, and now I'm up to date, and now you are up to date. UFC 190 this weekend. All of the breaking news that's going to happen. Weigh-ins will be on 5 o'clock on Friday, and we will bring you all of the action and the results on Twitter on Saturday at WOW Show. Have a wonderful weekend. It is Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.